Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning. It is Tuesday morning, the 19th of June, and the sun is rising. And as always, that tomb is empty yet again today. And that is good news indeed for all of us, because our Savior lives and there is always hope and always future in the beautiful kingdom of Jesus. It doesn't mean our present circumstances are always easy, but it does mean that whatever is happening is not the end of the story. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings, and I am your host, your interim host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined in studio by Matt Reynolds, running the sound and board again this morning. He's substituting for Logan Rausch, who's off for the first 3 days of this week, and show producer Paul Perot in the newsroom. Grateful to him and to Rachel Sutton for booking the great guests that are part of the morning show. Now, Matt and Paul, we're, of course, going to talk quite a bit about the immigration situation at our southern border this morning. We've got Tommy Binion in Hour 1 coming up in just a few minutes and Bruce Ashford in Hour 2. But the headline that really caught my attention yesterday and still kind of waking up to it this morning is that President Trump ordered the creation of a military space force. And it kind of just awakened the kid in me. But you guys had some mixed reaction to this news. Matt, for you, you were not a Star Wars guy growing up. I'm thinking Luke Skywalker, the possibility of heading to the stars here. But for you, you are not a Star Wars guy.
I was asleep 2 minutes into the news release.
So, and you've never even seen the movies, right? You've seen 10 minutes of the first movie, The New Hope, and that's it.
Yeah, I had a roommate who told me, hey, you got to check it out. He's all excited. I told him, it's not my thing. I tell you, I'm going to be asleep.
So, okay, so this headline is not for you, but Paul, over in the newsroom here, for you, this was a moment of childhood dream stuff, more of a Trekkie situation. You brought up some early Star Trek stuff with this.
Well, if you know your Star Trek history, before the Starfleet was around, there was a group called the Makos.
The Makos.
The Military Assault Command Operation.
And what was their role in the Star Trek universe?
They were kind of like Space Marines. They would go in, and of course, there was also Space Marines in another cartoon show, but I won't go there right now. But, you know, it just kind of brought me to that and going, hey, we're ready for that now, are we?
See, and Paul, and so if in another life, you're 18 years old and people are lining
18?
Up. And well, and just saying it, and in these military red uniforms lining up to head to the stars, do you leave this producer deal and go right now?
In a younger time, yes. No, not as a 50-year-old.
Fair enough. Well, exciting moment to see if we can travel to the stars. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, regular guest Tommy Binion will be with us, and we'll jump into this immigration situation and what's happening there at our border. That cup of coffee at this hour matters. I got to tell you, Matt, we're about a third of the way in, and I think we're going to go through about two mugs this morning. So we're going to be joined here now by Tommy Binion, who is a regular contributor to the show. Love having him on here. He's part of the Heritage Foundation in Washington, D.C., and Tommy is the Director of Congressional and Executive Branch Relations. So good morning, Tommy. Tell us, what do you do the moment after you pick up your coffee in the morning? What does this role involve?
Well, it has me on the Hill most of the time, on Capitol Hill, meeting with lawmakers throughout the city, meeting at different government agencies. You know, what we do at the Heritage Foundation is we produce public policy research, and it's my job to make sure that research is in the hands of policymakers so that they have the latest data, the latest analysis of the policies before they make those critical decisions.
Do you have a lot of people doing similar things, that as Washington, D.C. is waking up this morning, that you got to be first in line to get some of this into their hands, or how does this go?
Well, yeah, that is pretty much, I don't want to say cottage industry, because it is the industry in Washington. Congress, the executive branch, people trying to influence policy outcomes, that's pretty much what everybody does in Washington. I don't know, maybe some of your listeners have visited the Capitol and they know how busy that is. There are lines to get through security at every door. It's a bit of a circus up here, that's for sure.
So you're basically going to the airport every morning is what it feels like, going through security. I can't imagine waking up to that each morning, Tommy.
Yeah, we do have security, you know, and you go through it to get through every building. Something like last summer where members of Congress were targeted in a shooting, it reminds you that's a great thing to have. And in this great country, we have the first responders who keep us safe from events like that. And so it is a little bit frustrating, but it's also humbling and it keeps you safe.
Well, let's get into some of the headlines. And obviously the one that is dominating the news cycle right now is what's happening at our southern border, in which we see these horrifying pictures of children being taken away from their families. At least that's the way it's being portrayed over and over. And I think both sides of the aisle are seeing that this is a humanitarian crisis. But where the divergence is what to do about it. Tell us where we are in Washington. What's some of the conversation? Sounds like there's some votes tonight even. Kind of walk us through this whole deal.
Yeah, so there is a policy at the border. After if an entire family is interdicted on the border and they then claim that they're seeking asylum. So what you would normally do if you're seeking asylum is you would visit the U.S. consulate in the first country you come to. So if you're coming from Honduras, Guatemala, El Salvador, where many of these families are coming from, you would visit the U.S. consulate in Mexico, and all of that runs smoothly. The trouble we're running into is when a family makes it all the way to the U.S. border, doesn't visit the consulate, but attempts to come across the border, is interdicted by the Border Patrol, and then they claim asylum. For reasons that we need to secure our border and we don't want to set up bad incentives on the border, what the administration does is they detain everybody who's seeking asylum. They're going to get an asylum hearing. They're going to get what's called a credible fear hearing. That's part of our law, and that's the right thing to do. But this is happening, 200, 300, 400, 500, 1,000 times a day on the southern border. And so those hearings, they can take, you know, a year to get to. So there is a Ninth Circuit court ruling that requires that the government can only detain children. If they're part of these family unions, they can only detain children for 20 days. After those 20 days, they are then resettled somewhere in the country with hopefully a family member. And in about 90% of the case, they are resettled with a family member. They're separated from their parents who are awaiting their asylum hearing. But they're settled with a family member. They're potentially going to go to a U.S. public school. I'm not sure that this is a humanitarian crisis like you see when you have, you know, refugees in camps without enough food or water. There's certainly nobody being treated in an inhumane way. It's an unfortunate circumstance created by our need to have reasonable immigration laws. There will be a fix offered by the United States Congress. They're going to try to attack it in two ways. One is they're going to allow families to be detained together, so that 20-day standard is going to go away. And they're going to try to fix the asylum system so that you're not able to get caught coming across the border and then claim asylum. We're going to encourage people who are claiming asylum to do so at the U.S. consulate. We're going to adjust the credible fear standard so that asylum is a little more what it is meant to be, and we're going to see how those two things affect the problem. There's a larger narrative going on in immigration. The House is considering a fix to President Obama's unlawful DACA program, and so this issue is kind of being lumped in with that in a broader compromise bill. And I know that was a long-winded explanation, but it takes that to explain how we got here.
Well, it's super helpful, Tommy, because we just get subject to, of course, the 30-second news cycle, and it's hard to really understand what's happening. And we'd love your perspective in a second in terms of the possibility of reform. But before we go to break here, just in the next minute or so, can you tell us what are the reasons why children are getting separated at the border? I mean, it can't be just one single reason. How does this work?
Well, so they're not being separated immediately coming across. What happens is if an entire family is arrested at the border, in other words, they're trying to sneak across the border. They're not trying to get in with a passport or a visa or anything like that. They're trying to cross the border illegally. If an entire family is arrested, they will be detained together. And that family, most of them are coached to claim asylum, meaning I am in fear of persecution in my home country. Can I have safe harbor in your country? And we do that. We grant that only after they've had a hearing to establish that their fear of persecution in their home country is a credible fear. Those hearings take time. So between when they are arrested and when their hearing happens, we can't detain kids for longer than 20 days, according to a court ruling. So we will then HHS, the Department of HHS, the Office of Refugee Resettlement, which is a very responsible office, does this all the time. They will find a family member or a close family friend of the family living in the United States legally, and they will bring that child to live with that family while their parents await their hearing back on the border. So, yes, they're gonna get separated from their family. It's not forever. They're going to live with a family member. They're being resettled within the United States of America, which is quite a blessing in my opinion. And that's how it happens. Is while their parents are awaiting a hearing, because they were caught crossing the border, the kids are going to go live with a family member inside the United States.
You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, joined by Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation. And we'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the hope around some kind of reform in this situation. It's 18 minutes past the hour. It's Faith Radio Mornings. I am your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we are joined by Tommy Binion of the Heritage Foundation, talking a lot about immigration, obviously, this morning. Some of the headlines and the pictures that we see are troubling and difficult to navigate. And Tommy, I'd like to follow up just for relative to the possibility of reform in the system. And even though we have this 20-day time period, that is the maximum that these kids can be separated, I think any person would suggest that even being separated at all, even for just a few minutes from your parents and being kind of taken away in these situations is less than ideal. So, and can be fairly traumatic. So what is the hope that we could close this 20-day gap, that these families aren't going to be separated? Where are we at with this?
Well, so I want to miscommunicated. I want to be clear. Kids will be detained with their parents for 20 days, and then afterwards they will be separated. So Okay. They could wind up being separated for much longer than 20 days.
Got it.
Now, back to the question of reform, you can see the president is very frustrated with this. He, like some of us do, when we get frustrated, we type in all caps. So he had a tweet yesterday. All it said was in all caps, change the laws. I just thought that was so interesting. Here we have a president literally in sort of metaphorical terms screaming at the Congress, please help me with this. Change the laws. The only institution that can do that is the Congress. The president is obviously the target of this media campaign, but he's out there begging the Congress, please alleviate this situation. Please change the laws. And that's what has to happen. We can't do this with a policy change. We can't do this with an executive order. The Congress has to change the laws.
And where is this?
They're looking at doing that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to say, where's the sticking point between the two of them in terms of why wouldn't this just be an easy, simple change? Where are they coming from on both sides of the aisle?
Well, so and this is the Washington way. It can't be simple. What they should do is they should offer a bill that fixes this situation, and that's all it does. It's like a four-page bill, offer it up, vote on it. It'll pass with flying colors, no problem. That's not what they're going to do. They're going to take this policy change and they're going to roll it into a 250-page immigration bill that does 100 different things. They're going to put the most controversial immigration items in there, the wall, amnesty, DACA, all kinds of controversial immigration things are rolled into this bill. It's called the Ryan Compromise. It's a compromise that Paul Ryan worked out. So, the president's going to be on the Hill tonight. He's going to express support for that bill. But still, I think it's regretful that such a simple and necessary policy change that universally makes sense, and the president is tweeting in all caps, please do this, it has to be attached to a bill that may not pass. This Ryan Compromise, it's only about 50-50 that it's going to pass. And it's, of course, got some sweeping immigration changes in it. So This is why Americans end up frustrated with their government, is because this doesn't make sense to us. Why can't they spend an hour tonight passing the four-page bill that makes all the sense in the world to everybody, and then they can wake up tomorrow and they can deal with the more complicated stuff? But they try to get the complicated stuff done with the sweeteners, like this simple fix. I know that's a frustrating answer. If everybody agrees, why can't it just happen? Well, the leadership's made the decision to lump it into the broader bill.
And I saw over the weekend that President Trump was lukewarm at best relative to the possibility of this bill, but maybe a sort of walking back that some of the statements that he had where he wouldn't support this bill. What's the atmosphere like today between the president and the possibility of this bill coming to the table?
Well, the atmosphere is anticipation. Here's what's going to happen. The House Republicans, every single Republican congressman or woman, is going to meet tonight in the Capitol at 5:30, and the president's going to be there. And the president's going to tell them in private, no cameras rolling, what he thinks about this immigration situation, what he thinks about this bill. He's expected to say, I support it. Please vote for it. Keep in mind, this president is extremely powerful within the Republican base. Just last week, he endorsed one of these congressmen. He endorsed their primary opponent at like 4 o'clock in the afternoon on Election Day, and she ended up winning because of that. So, you know, this is a president with a lot of sway within the Republican Party. What he says to these members tonight is going to matter. That's going to happen at 5:30. And then at 6:30, they're going to do what's called the whip check. And the Steve Scalise is the whip, and his job is to – they're not going to vote yet, but he's going to count votes. He's going to privately ask members, do you plan to vote yes or no? And that's going to happen immediately after the president speaks on this bill. So it's all going to happen in sequence. If the whip check goes well, we could see a vote on this by the end of the week or early next week.
And of course, and I don't know if you can look in your crystal ball here, but if something does get passed, how is each side going to claim victory? What are they going to suggest they are responsible for in this change? Because, of course, both want to try to seize the narrative as soon as they can.
Well, so that's a very interesting question. The bill that we're talking about, I don't expect a single Democrat to vote for it. They haven't given any indication that they support it. Because it has money for President Trump's wall in it, the Democrats do not support it. So, how are they going to react to it? Just look at how they've reacted to tax reform. They didn't support tax reform, and they've spent the last sort of 7 months since it passed attacking it.
And there's
I hope that doesn't happen on this bill on immigration, but I don't see, that's what my crystal ball says, is the Democrats oppose this, and they're going to use it as a political football in the fall.
Yeah, well, we're coming up to the 2018 midterms, and of course, there's a lot of conversation about a blue wave sweeping through Congress and the House of Representatives that because of the reaction among some to President Trump, and yet that seems to be moderating a bit. So where will this fit in, do you see, into the midterm election cycle?
Well, if Republicans fix it, if it's put to bed, I can't see them running on it because, it's not extremely popular within the Republican base. It has DACA and amnesty in it. I think that they'll basically be able to stave off the Democrats, but it's not something that they'll feature heavily in their campaigns. On the other hand, if this issue is still hanging out there, if for yet another election cycle immigration is unresolved, I think the Democrats will spend a lot of time focusing on it. That's sort of what is motivating the Republican leadership right now, is the fear that this is what Democrats will focus on all fall if Republicans aren't able to figure it out. Republicans, of course, they want to be talking about tax cuts. I don't know about you. My paycheck went up when Republicans cut my taxes. They want to be talking about that because they know how happy all of us are about that. They want to get every other issue out of the way. And this is part of that.
It is fascinating to watch each side try to seize the narrative. But as you said, that narrative tends to last about 15 seconds in today's culture and is swayed by the latest tweet or headline that comes out. Say, Tom, we only have about 30 seconds left. Just give us your reaction quickly to the news that we're going to have a military space force. Are you lining up? Are you putting on the red jumpsuit and jumping into these space vehicles?
No, I recently finished watching Lost in Space on Netflix, and I am not signing up. I support the brave men and women who do, but some people are afraid of snakes. Some people are afraid of burning. I'm afraid of space. Those movies where they end with somebody sort of floating away from the spaceship, all of that, that scares me. So I'm not in, but I support the military as strongly as it can be supported, and I thank God every day for our brave men and women who do serve.
I love that. Yeah, it gets a little chilly in space from what I understand. And so when Clooney's floating away, you know, from Sandra Bullock in that movie, that's the stuff of horror and nightmares. Hey, Tommy, thanks for joining us this morning and helping us walk through all of this border conversation. We're going to take a break, and it's 27 minutes past the hour. We'll head to Lighten Up. Whatever you do. We are exactly halfway through the first hour. Great conversation with Tommy Binion. And in a minute, we'll be with Dr. Rosemary Stein, a regular guest of the show. We'll talk a little bit about the care of children and some of the things going on with her clinic as well. Great guest to have. We'll head to news and then come back in a few minutes with Impact Audio and then Rosemary Stein up next. Authors Bill and Pam Farrell are going to give us some tips here about how to keep the romance alive in your marriage.
What we want is somebody who is just proud of us, who can't hardly stand walking by us without saying, "You are just awesome." Now, we know that's not really realistic in life, but in every other arena of life, we compete. We have to watch our back. We have to discern, is this person safe? Are they not? We have to decide what kind of boundaries to set up, because if we have any talent at all, everybody wants it. And when we discover in our wives somebody who just loves us for us, like, I know that Pam can change an entire day if she walks by and says, "Man, you look good," and then just goes and does whatever. I'm distracted for the day because I know there's one person in life who thinks I'm all that. Even though she knows I'm imperfect and she knows I have my quirks and she knows that there's areas of my life I need to work on, like, I know all that too. And so I don't really need another person to point it out to me every day, even though it's easy to see. But when she's proud of me, it just changes the way I look at life. It lightens the burden. It makes me a better man.
And easier to live with. That's the thing that's so amazing. If we give a little bit of value and appreciation, our husbands become nice.
That's Bill and Pam Farrell talking just about relationship. And if you want to catch that entire segment, head to myfaithradio.com and search Romance Tips or Pam and Bill Farrell and check out the entire segment. Take a short break and be back with Dr. Rosemary Stein.
Can we believe one way and vote another? We may be seeing a lot of this in the coming weeks and months. This is Jim Garlow. I ask a politician, "Are you pro-life?" He said, "Yes." I ask, "Suppose there's a tie on Roe v. Wade overturning legislation that allows doctors to perform abortions legally. How would you vote?" He said, "I'd vote to continue it and keep it legal." "Then don't tell me you're pro-life," I said. And he says, "Oh, but I am personally." If you're personally pro-life, but you're not legislatively doing anything about it, you're worthless to that preborn baby. You can't believe one way and vote another as a politician or a citizen. In a monarchy and a dictatorship, people can't do anything about their government. But in a democracy, or in a constitutional republic like we have, we vote. We the people vote politicians into power. Make sure that what you believe determines how you vote. Be visceral about biblical values. This is Jim Garlow.
And that, of course, is the great walk-up music for our regular contributor here, Dr. Rosemary Stein. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner. And Rosemary comes on regularly to talk about medical care of children. And Dr. Stein, you have obviously a longstanding passion for helping our kids in a way that is even far more holistic than just taking them for a 15-minute appointment to a doctor's office. Is that right?
Oh, that's exactly the way I feel about the practice of pediatrics.
I was going through some of what you have available in your clinic. I was just mesmerized by what's going on in the clinic, what you offer, because, I mean, you have everything from obviously medical care, but you offer soccer programs and any number of things for our young people. Kind of just remind our listeners of the work that you do.
Thank you. Well, my husband and I have been in practice at the clinic for 20-some years, but at the clinic for over 18. And we decided that children have more than one facet, and therefore for them to be well, it's more than medical. So we do offer a lot of things in the community. We do a tutoring program for the children that are falling behind. We also have had a mentoring program that is biblical. We have soccer programs so that the boys can learn to be guided and led by other older than themselves, but young men.
Yep.
I do a behavior clinic so that I can guide and give reassurance and advice to moms and dads over the problems that the kids may be having at schools and also in their homes with behavior, but also their learning and their schoolwork. Because children have all these different facets. They're not just well or not well. They're not just healthy or unhealthy. They have problems in school or they have friends it's all of these different facets that create a well child, a child that has a hope and a future.
That's great. And, you know, as opposed to just maybe giving some medication to come around them, it's such a need. I see it in my young people that I teach at university now that they just haven't oftentimes had that kind of full care, and they're still trying to walk out of those things at 18, 19. So appreciate the work. And I know you help us walk through some of the medical headlines that are going on. And there was one of them that came up that I don't know that I normally get disturbed by headlines these days so much, but this one kind of got me, and it was titled Pot or Marijuana for Pregnancy, and that there appears to be in Colorado the ability that if you're a pregnant mother that you can go into a store and they will offer you pot to help with things like morning sickness. Tell us what's going on here, Rosemary.
Well, I think we've taken a problem that you have in a normal part of your life, like pregnancy, and they have focused on one little part, which is morning sickness. And we have decided that because marijuana has some anti-emetic or anti-nausea abilities, that we're going to help that mom not have nausea by offering the child pot. But we forgot, why is this mom having nausea? Oh, that's right. It's because she's pregnant. And what does that mean for the baby? Well, while mom is smoking pot, the baby is too. Mm. And the problem is the mom's brain is not developing, but the brain of the baby is completely under development. So we have really no idea, because I don't think that we've really done any studies on how this has a long-term effect on our unborn babies. And it's very concerning, so because we're thinking of ourselves at that moment. The mom is thinking, oh, I really have to get rid of the nausea, but she has no understanding, or she's not being led to comprehend. There's a bigger picture in all this. You have this feeling of nausea because you're pregnant. You're building another child inside of you.
And it's amazing to just think that this would be an option. But is the science pretty clear that some of the difficult chemicals, the hard chemicals in pot, that being THC, does that cross through the placenta and into the baby's development? Is that pretty clear at this point?
Oh, yeah, that part is pretty clear. And what's really funny is that for years and years, one of the things that we check for is for THC in mom. To give us an idea of if the child has been in contact with drugs, and we have long considered that a at risk child when we know that there's THC in the mom, or we can detect it in the child. And so now we're sort of because some states have legalized pot and others are considering it, then we're just sort of looking the other way and say, well, maybe it's not so bad after all.
And what do you see in the impact of mothers who may be smoking marijuana while their kids are developing? What do you see ultimately with the kids? What's some of the pattern or trends?
Well, and it's a conglomerate of things that we, symptoms and signs that we can see, because moms who are, habitually drinking or using marijuana, they're also doing other drugs. So we see babies that are very jittery or way too mellow, and they don't breathe right. But we also see children, babies that are not cognitively on par where we were thinking that they should be. So they're a little bit developmentally delayed as they come out. They just don't roll over. They don't make that eye contact because, you know, everything is sort of mellow and slowed down. And we could see these trends in babies, and we can't think that, oh, once it gets out of the system, they're going to be fine because, once again, that's a developing body. It's a developing brain. So once you put that baby in contact with certain drugs and substances, that is going to have a long-term effect. It's not like an adult brain at all.
Mm, and so if there's obviously a lot of concern about secondhand cigarette smoke and the impact that has on somebody's health. Do we have a similar situation as recreational marijuana use is growing in our country? Does secondhand marijuana smoke have the same kind of impact on people, even if they aren't smoking the marijuana themselves?
That's exactly right. And some of the studies have shown that the smoke itself can be as detrimental to your health as secondhand smoking as cigarette smoking can be. So therefore, you know, in utero, it's going to be even much so because there's nowhere for you to go. You can't walk outside. You're there and subject to, you know, the people that are supposed to be taking care of you.
Mm. Speaking with Dr. Rosemary Stein, we'll take a short break here for about a minute. And when we come back, Dr. Stein, I would love to get in a little bit with the rise of depression in our culture and what you're seeing with young people and how we can help them walk through that. So we'll take a minute break. Be back here shortly. Just about 12 minutes before the top of the hour, and we are joined by our regular contributor, Dr. Rosemary Stein, to talk through medical issues with our children and just how they're developing these days. And Dr. Stein, we talked before break about some of the rise of depression among our young people. And I'd just be curious, as you've been in the practice for as long as you've been, what have you seen? Have you seen an increase in depression and anxiety among our young people?
I absolutely have, and part of it is because of what we were talking about, that children are meant to be multifaceted, and we're creating a generation of children that have one or two facets only, and we're not working on the rest of them. And to make matters worse, I think the article that we're going to be discussing is talking about some of the medications that can cause depression in themselves. And I was giving this thought as I was reading it because one of the most, you know, the newly prescribed medications are antidepressants in children. But lo and behold, antidepressants can cause depression and even a quite increased risk of suicide in our young adults and our children. And they're being prescribed quite frequently.
Hmm. And that's obviously, we've seen some troubling headlines with Anthony Bourdain and Kate Spade, some celebrities who recently have killed themselves, and even the stats in our country are increasing quite a bit among young people. Is there a role for some form of medication maybe to just help kids get some sort of equilibrium back and then do the holistic work, or would you suggest that not even starting with the medication?
Personally, I am very cautious about starting children on antidepressants because their brains don't work like adult brains do. And there have been study after study that show that they have an increased rate of suicide on antidepressants compared to adults. So obviously we're doing something wrong when we're giving them antidepressants. That's in my experience, though. So some of the data out there might not show that, but in my 20-some years of experience and as big as my practice is, I'm not seeing any long-term benefits to using antidepressants on children because, once again, you're not getting to the root of the problem. That child is expressing. They don't have depression the way that we have depression. They have moments of lulls and ups. And so if you sort of cover the problem instead of getting to the heart of the problem, talking it over with the kid, trying to give the kid some real instruments, tools on how to deal with those moments where they are in a lull, where they feel that they're worthless, then you leave them sort of in a haze and they're not able to sort of dig out of it. Kids will normally sort of be able to dig out of those moments of lulls by themselves, but when you help them, when you give them a tool, when you give them a rope to get themselves out, they do it so much quicker. And kids will change in their affect from moment to moment. You can see a kid that is depressed one day, and the next day he's able to come in, and he's like renewed and really excited. And it could be just he has a dog now. And so kids, once again, are very different. We don't cover the problem. We should be helping them to have tools and instruments so that they know at this moment, this is what works for me the best.
Yeah, and I'm way out of my league with some of the science here, so I have a question for you around just the long-term usage of antidepressants. Does our body sort of, even if it responds at first in some level, does our body sort of learn to adapt and change? And so if we don't deal, as you're talking about, with the core issue that's giving rise to the depression, then our body will figure out a way around the medicine, and that over time it just really doesn't work.
Well, and children are well known for needing different, more and more medication to be able to adapt and to get over their feelings of depression or anxiety. So it's not unusual that once you get a child on one medication or you start him, let's say on Ritalin or a stimulant, that to be able to achieve a certain, in quotations, wellness, that child needs another medication, and on top of that, another medication. But guess what? Each one of these medications has a side effect, like we were talking about depression or tics or not being able to sleep. And then you're medicating the side effects. And so then you have kids that are on 4 and 5 medications, and you have a kid who's the poor thing is a jumbled mess.
Mm. Speaking with Dr. Rosemary Stein here on Faith Radio Mornings, and we have about 2 minutes left, Dr. Stein. I'd be curious, too, then, what is the role of work for kids and having a sense of purpose and work, whether it's a summer job or something that they're engaged with to maybe help alleviate some of the depression that's going on?
And that is such a great line, because it seems like, if you give this kid work, he's going to get more depressed because he's not able to do it.
That's how it makes me feel, so I get it, yes.
Yeah. And it's quite the opposite. If you give the kids a sense of self-worth, if you give them chores at home and you have them earn a little bit of money or, we were thinking about buying you a dirt bike and you just there's an achievement at the end and he gets to see the labor, the fruit of his labor, that kid will most usually rise up and thrive. And that's what we need to be stimulating our children with. No quick fixes. It's a little by little. You see how your work can achieve something for you. And children need to feel that they're part of a team. So when they're sitting and the rest of the family is involved in fixing and helping at the home, that's not good. But if you turn that around and the child feels that he has self-worth, then that is wonderful for that child.
Mm. So, and you have some soccer camps involved here. Does that mean you're a soccer fan? Are you following the World Cup as our globe is coming together around soccer?
Actually, I'm not very in tune with soccer. I do follow the Soccer Cup, and I was happy to see that a team that was the underdog won. I'm always glad to see the surprises and when a team or a group of people that you were not expecting to do well does well. But I use the soccer analogy with my children at the practice all the time. And in fact, I've seen a lot of kids turn around and be able to do well because they apply what they learn in soccer and teamwork to their lives. And then they start, once again, they start thriving and doing better.
So helpful. Dr. Stein, thank you for joining us this morning. And as always, just kind of walking us through some of these tricky issues. We really appreciate it. We got 5 minutes before the top of the hour. We'll take a short break and wrap up our time. It's 4 minutes before the top of the hour, and great first hour with Dr. Stein and Tommy Binion kind of talking us through different dimensions of life. I think that's sort of top of the mind stuff. And of course, we started the hour with President Trump ordering the creation of a military space force. And I think it's really timely that he did this because today is also the 40th anniversary of the release of the classic Space Invaders game. So we, I mean, if we're close to these invaders coming in, we're going to need this military space force. Paul, were you a Space Invaders guy growing up?
I was more a Pac-Man guy.
Pac-Man. So Pac-Man. You were after the ghosts and the big pills and all of that. So why not as a Trekkie, why not the Space Invaders deal?
Well, actually, it's interesting because there was a movie theater that had an arcade next to it in Monticello, Minnesota, where I grew up. And, Space Invaders was okay, but there's another game that was more based on Star Trek, closer to it, but it wasn't. But that one I really grooved with. I like that one.
Right.
But Space Invaders, it's like, you know, all I'm doing is going shooting up. I mean, slide the thing back and forth, shoot up at all these little creatures. I prefer the other one. There's a little more action to it.
Well, and the thing with Space Invaders is that there was no chance of winning. I mean, it was just they got closer and closer
each round.
So these little blips were assaulting Earth, and you could hold them off for like 3 or 4 rounds, but ultimately you would succumb. And it was sort of this defeating video game that you could never get through.
Yeah, I guess this is why we need the Makos or whatever, this assault team, you know, that Trump wants to put together.
Yeah, I really think that.
In case they really do come, you know.
You know, if there's life, we're going to find it, Paul. I mean, they might. I've seen enough movies that this may be happening. Matt, were you a Space Invaders guy growing up?
Not really.
That's all.
Matt, what'd you do with your life?
I know you didn't watch Star Wars.
It was
you didn't
baseball.
Well, I mean, I can respect that, but okay. I mean, this whole thing about missing Star Wars and Space Invaders, I'm not sure. I mean, Paul, what are we going to do with him?
I don't know. We probably should sit him in a room and force him to watch. We'll have to tape his eyes open or something.
I did see in Target the other day, they have that old Atari joystick that you can literally just plug into your TV with 10 classic games. Matt, tomorrow during breaks, I'm bringing that in, and we're going to work our way through Space Invaders.
Sounds great.
Had a great first hour. We'll take a break for top of the hour news. And then when we come back in the second hour, we'll talk with Bruce Ashford and go through the immigration conversation again.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.